Yeah, I think I will stand. I don't think I've ever read poetry sitting down, like officially. So I don't want to try it tonight. Let me just. I know Jan always says you have to get right up on it, but I feel like I'm too right up on it. Can you hear me? I don't even need the mic. Let's be honest. Thank you so much, Joan Bauer, who is a Pittsburgh treasure. We should all be having her birthday should be a local day of remembrance and celebration. She does so much for poets in Pittsburgh. And I'm hoping I can host a book party for her when her next book is published. She is just a treasure. And thank you, Jimmy, for curating this wonderful series. I'm delighted to be here. I'm going to read 6 poems. I want to start with a poem for Jan Beatty, my dear, dear friend, brilliant poet, and a writer who continues to honor women writers and to do everything she can to advocate for women writers. I've been thinking about the Mad Women. I've been writing an essay about the Mad Women this week. This is a poem that I wrote. I have an MFA from Carlos program where Jan teaches, and I wrote this when I was working with her in the graduate program. It's a poem about my mother. I have a lot of poems about my mother. This poem was a finalist for the Aesthetica Prize in England and published in England. So I'll begin with this. My mother as Walden Pond. Out of her twig-filled lungs, a strong wind whirls. She is a small stream, obstructed, a standing body, water-filled. In spring, she floods parched uplands. In winter, bristles over. She is walkable and swimmable. Apple tree wood roots inside her teeming throat. Her calves and feet are pliable as leisure. Her fingers, alburnum. White paved stones encircle her and mark the solitary home of one lone loon who laughs loud at her watered-down jokes. She is time gestated in the song of whippoorwill, a 17-year Concord locust hatched of ribbed solitude. The serenade of fox, the swoop of owl, a clear deep well of April green, the rising steam in January thaw. Neither inlet or outlet. Some think her bottomless or speculate man-made. Some say brought forth by rod. She contains herself in color, appears altered at a distance. Sometimes her blue reflection rises in the form of firm-fleshed fish. They swim her depths, which are transparent. This next poem is a poem that I wrote after the American poet Ruth Stone. She's a poet that I love. She died a few years ago. It's called Raspberries. I started out in western Pennsylvania hills with wild raspberry and blackberry bushes and my mother's apple field, bread and ripe fruit and fresh milk. My mother cleaned the carpet right off the floor. My father was a Troy Hill boy who played piano and smoked Pall Malls and drank whiskey. He won my mother in a dance contest. Who wouldn't learn to jitterbug for a prize like her? They took a train to Cape Cod for a honeymoon and bought hats for their mothers. They sailed all the way from that cape to 10 children. My whole life has been ripe with wild fruit. All the men I've loved had left feet. I was innocent until I got myself a good pair of rain boots. There is no point in wondering what I'll come to. With my first words, I wrote my own path straight to New York, all night accents, brick stoops. I left there like a mad dog running free, like our Dusty who got himself killed down the street, chasing the neighborhood boys. He ran smack into a fender. We buried him up in the woods after a proper funeral. No amount of experience can shake the ripeness out of me or my mother or my father, who didn't just win a bride with his right feet and big shoes. He won a green thumb. Thank you. Thank you so much. I wanna read a poem for Celeste, and I think I'll read this next poem is a new poem, and it's a poem I wrote about a walk I took in Ireland with a poet friend of mine. Her name is Kathy Darcy. She took me on a walk when I was in Ireland, in a kind of rural place in Ireland called the Blackwater Valley, which is right on the border of Cork. And it was on the Pilgrim's Walk, St. Declan's Way, which is this very ancient walk. And it's the walk, St. Declan is one of the premier saints, along with Patrick, who brought Christianity to Ireland. And along with that, it's also a famine walk. It's a famine road. It's one of the roads that the Irish took when they were starving to get out of Ireland. And strangely enough, also referred to as the high road. So the kind of incongruity of the famine road also being a high road is what suggested this poem to me. Arise beyond wanting. A moss-covered day on St. Declan's Way by the Lickey River with Kathy. Walking towards evening, we pause at the water. Legs submerged, sucking mud at our toes. It's a famine road too, Kathy tells me, known to some as the high road. Two epithets at odds with themselves. How can a road be both high and low? Be surfaced in dearth and arise beyond wanting? Here, where mud, thick as sludge, pulls at my boots like propensity, where each step requires effort to loose itself from May's buttress, where wet splatters of clay cake my knees, dry in smears to my face, this roadstead more tunneling in than root out. On the Lickey River with Kathy, pausing as evening steps forward, to our left, there's a glimmering hawthorn. Horses approach to the right. Their eyes hold the oldness of myth, distort dusk into manifest darkness. On a pilgrimage crest that bought Christ himself deep into this briar of proof, this wellhead of surnames, where two acts and two states of being can attach themselves to one place. Like a twice misnamed bastard, exiled from the sacred, who is later revealed to have fathered himself. I feel like I'm reading a lot of place poems tonight. I thought about that today when I was practicing. And this is another place poem. This is actually, I was just in Ireland for a brief writing break, and I got to teach a workshop there, which was really great. And I'm always struck when I travel abroad by how forward-thinking we are in the United States. One of the kind of silly things that always strikes me is the amount of cutlery that I'm faced with. When I go out to lunch, there's like 25 forks, and there's a knife for the salmon. And I grew up in a family of 10, and so, you know, having a fork, a knife, and a spoon was a lot in our house. But I think it's representative of the kind of old world and the way they're always looking back, and we're always looking forward, and we've kind of simplified things. So this poem came out of thinking about that and the dangers of being overly civilized. In the land of fish knives. In the land of fish knives, tiny spoons stir the blossoms of chamomile, and soup is sipped sideways from giant utensils. Rough-like depressions rest outside utterance. Verbs slurp themselves down into morsels of nouns, and every table speaks salmon. Every accent is local, except for the landed, who speak the king's English in native disguise. Soufflés come as fish pancakes. Sauces are dense, white, and ruse-based. Beetroots take hold of goat's feet, like sycamores take hold of moist earth, like hands take hold of cutlery, fish knives with fancy dull sides, soup spoons with wide elliptical openings, hollowed so liquid might thicken, be viscous, and take hold of surface, the way mouths take hold of words, self-sown and procumbent as forces of habit that creep flattened and pointed on tongues sharpened by implement. Thank you so much. I have two more poems. I'm going to read a new poem, and I was actually working on it today, another place poem. And this is for my beautiful husband, Tom. Many of you know him. He's also an advocate for poetry. He's done a lot, certainly for me, but he's also, his law firm has sponsored the Mad Woman Book Party for many years. We were on a drive up in the mountains in the Laurel Highlands, and again, I was kind of struck by the weirdness of place names. This poem is called Lick Hollow. I'll be damned, I think to myself, as I peer out the window. My husband of 12 years driving us forward, 8 miles out of Uniontown, into a 2-mile stretch inexplicably christened the Lick Hollow Nature Trail. What's more, Lick Hollow quickly connects to Pine Knob up ahead, a rough span that ends in an outcropping overlook. Winter stare suits this rugged terrain, suits the nature outside and within us, elevations that rapidly rise over 2,000 feet above sea level. In between, red oak slopes shelter low coves, and embedded in those, ancient rock shelves contain microhabitats for rare species science is only just learning about. I'll be damned, I think to myself, as we pass through Lick Hollow. Pine knobs full of sap, thick as syrup, border forests intact from all human disturbance. I'm going to end with a poem, another place poem, and this poem is after the Australian poet Les Murray, who's one of my favorite poets, and it's called Deciduous. It's about plants and trees that come back every year. I am the seed that roots and spreads. I am the underbow unbearing. I am the meristem, the forest in refuge, the division in moss and the division in fern. I am the absence of sound in deep rise, in snow-buried mound, in matter-of-fact serration, the feeling of stillness that widens and widens, then rustles and spills from forked tongue to tadpole spitting stream. I am boundlessness of now, when it is good to bear nothing but the weight of its great vastness. While winters pass from absence to deafening gathering to absence again, many rebirths and sprawling coverings, till the falling ahead becomes the falling behind, and half the short seasons of the day are sameness. Widening pools cast my perpetual echo. I am bark of skin dividing out. I am winged vertebrae weaving. I am cambium, the forest in refuge, the division in fern, the place of meristem division. Thank you very much.